your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for tuning in to Sunday morning wake-up call. And a special thanks to those folks at Richmond's 103.1. Our guest today, Kathy Galvin, Charlottesville City Councilor, fairly new to the scene, at least in the downtown City Council area. And Dixon Disposal allows Kathy to be on WNRN with us today. They support WNRN, and Dixon can help you protect the earth by utilizing single-stream recycling in their regular pickup service. Dixon Disposal offers weekly leaf removal up to 5 pounds or more. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more info, it's DixonDisposal.com or call them 434-978-2111. All right, back with Kathy Galvin as our guest today. Kathy, I've called you a newbie. Is that what you or have been a member of Charlottesville School Board?
Yes.
But was that during the appointed time or the elected time?
That was an elected school board. It was actually the second time there was an election. I ran in 2007, and so we were pretty new to the scene, the political campaign scene. So I think we were under the radar screen in many ways. It was low key, very collegial between the candidates. And very different experience, I think, than running in 2011, especially pre-primary.
Well, let's chat about that for a minute. Again, Kathy Galvin, a new member, first running a campaign in last year, 2011. Your first Charlottesville City Council meeting was January 3rd of this year, I believe.
Yes.
So let's talk about running a campaign. You talked about how it was very collegial. Everyone got along quite well in the city council, in the school board area, but as city council in the primary campaign, not so much. Explain that a little more.
I think there were, again, when you're running for city council, there are a lot more issues, not only the schools. You're dealing with infrastructure, you're dealing with education, you're dealing with employment and economics. So that just gives rise to a lot more areas to disagree. And in the city council campaign, as most people understand, there were some contentious issues. There was the water plan, there was the Meadow Creek Parkway, and that was something that I think was very different than running for school board, where people were looking at what was best for the children in the city schools. You might have some slightly different orientations as to what needed to change in order to improve the governance, perhaps, of the schools or how to budget better. But ultimately, there was only one main issue, which was the quality of education for our kids. But again, in city council, there were many, many other issues that came into play. And we had Democrats as well as independents running, so that was a big difference, too.
Were you caught off guard by that, or did you go into it with some sort of expectation that it might not be quite as friendly?
I was surprised at the relentless nature of the council, running for council. And that meant every night, every day, and a number of forums was pretty intense. Running for city school board, for instance, we had to make up our own forums. We had to call neighborhood associations and ask, can you please host a forum for us? Whereas with the council, people were coming after us asking for time and opportunity to talk in a group. So it was a very different experience, just a lot more intense, a lot more intense.
So now you're a politician. Do you accept that title or defer that or disclaim that?
I believe that I'm an elected official. By that I mean I am held accountable for what I do and what I say to the people that have elected me. That is politics.
But different from a politician.
I think the connotation of a politician today is that there's you're in it for glory and power and fame. I think I like to look at it more in the sense that it's a fundamental tenet in democracy that people do have to, you know, pick up the mantle and be willing to lead. And that's very important, and the people have to have trust in that leadership.
Our guest today on the Wake Up Call is Kathy Galvin. She's one of the recently elected city council members in Charlottesville. This program is pre-recorded. I'm spending the weekend with my dad celebrating his 70th birthday. So happy birthday, Dad. So no phone calls today, just Kathy and I talking about what it's like to be a politician or an elected city official, and various topics, as well as her campaign. We'll be talking about some of her goals and specific topics a little later in the hour as we go along. Kathy, ran, I believe, Greener, Smarter, Stronger by Design was your title as you went forth. Were you ever challenged on that? People said, wait, if you vote for the water plan, which we'll get into a little later on, then you can't be, you're not being greener or smarter. Were you challenged on that running title, running slogan?
I guess you could say I was challenged. I was questioned, and then I hope that I broadened people's understanding of what greener meant. From my perspective, I am an urban designer, an architect, and a planner. So I think regionally as well as locally. And to do that, you need to think about where does it make sense to grow and where doesn't it make sense to grow, not just in terms of one locality, but in terms of a region. So in that regard, greener in my mind was very much all about making sure that we were redeveloping in the city areas where it made sense and protecting, working with the surrounding county to protect the rural areas where it made sense.
But there's been, it's been, I think you used the word, contentious, both in running the primary campaign. And one of the things that I think many people found to be unusual was that current members of the Charlottesville City Council, who were not in the process of being reelected, sort of chose sides. I believe Mayor Dave Norris been on the program before, or then Mayor Dave Norris, stood up for some people but didn't support you. Has that caused any problems in now that you are a member of City Council?
We had a retreat, a council retreat, a week ago, Friday. At that time, we were really focused on what it means to really achieve results when you are a member of a group. The foundation of getting results is trust. And we spent the day working together, team building, what kind of projects we wanted to focus on, what were our priorities. And that was all about building trust. So that the idea of disagreeing with someone wasn't threatening. Because if you have a foundation of trust, then you can handle conflict. Conflict, when it's handled well, results many times in a better solution than if someone is saying, my way or not at all. So in my mind, you must be able to handle conflict, differences of opinion, and then forge a solution that really does garner the best ideas of both perspectives. And that builds trust, and that actually leads to results that have a positive impact on the community. So that's ultimately what I believe we all are working towards at this point in time on council. And that it's our differences, that, quite frankly, that make us stronger.
It's about 11:09 after getting started with Kathy Galvin here. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support here on WNRN, bringing the Banff Mountain Film Festival to Charlottesville on Sunday, March 11th and Monday, March 12th at the Paramount Theater. Proceeds will benefit the Ravana Conservation Society. And Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville and three locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. And back with our guest, Kathy Galvin, Charlottesville City Council member. You talk about differences. Your goals, have they changed since getting to your first city council meeting as opposed to what you ran on? You've had, what, three council meetings so far?
Right.
Once getting in there and seeing the working personalities, you've had three meetings. You've been on your, what did you call it? You've been up to Wintergreen for your...
Right, the council retreat.
For the council retreat. Have you had any thoughts on, you know what, maybe I need to think about this differently, or that may not work that way? Any changes in your goals?
I think what was really gratifying about the retreat is that finding out that there was a lot of common ground. For example, a very important goal for me is to expand economic opportunity, especially for our very lowest income members of our community. Dave Norris, you mentioned earlier, strongly supported me on that. By the same token, a priority for Dave was, let's really make a city market district a reality. I shared that goal, that intensity of the
That's been a goal for 10
so
years or more.
So let's just do it. And so, for example, I was recently contacted by some members of the Shawsville City Market Alliance to meet with them. And I said, can Dave Norris come along? Because he's very interested in that. So we'll be having some exchanges with members of the public who are very, very committed on that. And I want to forge a working relationship with every member of City Council. So I can see that we will be kind of working together on different areas that we each have an alignment of particular interest, so that when I say differences, we have different perspectives that can actually enrich the discussion. So, you know, for example, Dee Dee Smith was very interested. One of the priorities she mentioned at the retreat was a better transit system. I teach design and transportation at UVA as an adjunct faculty member. I know a lot about the kind of land patterns that are necessary to achieve the ridership you need to sustain multi-modes of transportation beyond the automobile. We all agree we want to get more cars off the road. We want to move towards more bicycle pedestrian orientation and public transit of various kinds, be it high-efficiency bus, maybe a bus rapid transit at some point. So in order to do that, we need to all get together to understand what that will take. And my perspective is a pretty informed one on that particular score. And so I hope someday that Dee Dee and I can work together on that. So it's that was what was so wonderful about finding out. We really had a lot of shared concerns.
Again, our guest today, Kathy Galvin from Charlottesville City Council. I want to get into transportation in a sec. But real quick question. There have been accusations that you and Dee Dee Smith don't get along, bad personality. You clang against one another, and will always be a battle on majority of topics. True?
Not true.
I had no expectation of a different answer, but I felt the need to ask. All right,
so clear the air. That's great.
Let's go back to transportation again. One of the goals that you started with, and one of the goals that I guess you said bringing your experience to make it work. Transportation. You mentioned the bus system. One of the complaints out there is that there are not enough buses. They don't run. They don't run in any sort of synchronization that would make them helpful to the downtown crowd who needs to get to where their jobs are, and they don't work in a system that allows the people on the fringes to come into the city without driving. What do you do about that without spending money to buy more buses and sort of not necessarily throwing the whole system out and redoing it, but certainly making some major adjustments to the current system?
Well, first of all, it's my understanding that the city is already embarking on a review, a study of its existing public transportation system. That I'm not sure of the details at this point, but that was something that came out during the campaign, that we've had a plan in place for the last 20 or 30 years that hasn't been updated. So, number one, let's take stock of what we're doing. Where is it working, where it's not working? I do know that there are areas of the city where if you want to get someplace on 29, say at Fashion Square Mall, it can take you up to an hour to do that. So if you're dependent on buses for work, that means that you're not going to always be at work on time. And that is a very, very critically important issue and an obstacle, I think, for a lot of our very low-income residents to getting good work.
Yeah, because it's not just that the job wants you there on time, regardless of your, you know, where you're working or who you're working with or for, but it's also because I was accused recently of throwing out statistics whenever needed, but there's certainly a large number of people using public transportation who also have childcare necessities, and so that's money spent because of having to be aware of, you know, when the bus shows up or maybe the bus is early or late, et cetera. And so even if it's only a dollar or two every day, that certainly adds up in that world.
And I think, again, when you're talking about those kinds of issues, those are obstacles to really gainful employment for many of our low-income residents. So it is transportation, daycare, affordable housing, and that is... I've been also pushing for a real comprehensive action plan for economic empowerment, economic opportunity. And that transportation is key. For example, there's a manufacturing plant on Airport Road, the Microwares Manufacturers, that makes the tools for the biotech industry. Biotech industry is a growing industry in Charlottesville. And so, to me, I see a connection there that could provide growth track employment for some folks in the city. But right now, we don't have transportation that gets out there so that people couldn't avail themselves of some of the work that might be happening in that light industrial plant. So that's what I mean by thinking about these things holistically as well, that right now, we've got to take stock of what we're doing, what we're not doing, and see where we can make some immediate tweaks to the system. I know, for example, there was a conversation I had with a resident of one of the public housing sites while I was campaigning, and she was going to school at PVCC. And so I asked her, well, how was the bus service out there? She said, well, she figured out the schedule. She could get out there okay. And then I said, well, how much does it cost you? And she said, it was $20 a month. And then she pointed out, why do I have to pay for bus service out to PVCC when UVA students have a free trolley in the city of Charlottesville? That's a very important finding. So that's also been something that we need to really understand, that we have to be very comprehensive in how we look at this problem. And so it's not only jobs, it's educational opportunities that people need access to. Talking about regional transportation, at one point in 2008, we were on the verge of having a regional transit authority. And then the recession hit, the interest waned, and that was a joint effort between the Altamont County and the city. I'd like to restart those conversations and see if we can start thinking in terms of having our own authority that could have its own means of raising funds to maintain a really good, high-efficiency bus service.
Guest today on the Wake Up Call, Kathy Galvin, one of the newer members on the Charlottesville City Council. Again, the show today, pre-recorded, no phone calls, but you can get in touch with Kathy how?
You can get on the Charlottesville City Council's website. There are links to me via email as well as my phone number. And so that's probably the best way. Just get onto the Charlottesville City Council. Just Google it, and you'll get on there, and you'll see all of us with our pictures and our bios and everything else, and then just click away.
We'll be coming back to some of the other goals, specific topics, as we continue through the hour.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 434-296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. All right, back with Kathy. Kathy, you were talking. We were talking about transportation, and it doesn't matter whether you're in Charlottesville or Albemarle or listening in the Harrisonburg or Richmond numbers for WNRN. You said action plan. We need an action plan. Charlottesville is notorious itself for years. It's been 30 plus years for the Meadow Creek Parkway, which still has not been built. Years in discussion about the dam or the dredging. We talked about the city market. I mean, Charlottesville is known for lots of discussion and little action on some of the bigger projects. And I know that folks in the other areas heard action plan who are in any way involved or following their government and just rolled their eyes, because that always seems to slow things down. It's certainly important. It's necessary to know what you're doing and how you're getting into it. But how do you bring about some sort of faster action plan with an actual end result?
Vision. Then you have to work hard at getting buy-in. That means communication. Communication between your counselors, but also more fundamentally between the council and the public. But we have to have a clear vision, and that is something I believe with regards to economics, for example, is we're on the verge of creating that vision. The Thomas Jefferson Partnership for Economic Development has just recently come out with its assessment of our kind of labor needs as well as the local industry needs. I believe that'll be foundational for our own Office of Economic Development and our own Office Department of Neighborhood Services to look at then, okay, so here are our labor needs. Here are what we have currently and by way of work. How do we increase employment opportunity? And then how do we increase the workforce readiness to match the kind of industries that are coming to our area? That's going to take concerted effort, and it's going to take setting goals, performance measures that say we are going to reduce unemployment by thus and such amount within the next 2 years.
Well, let me jump in real quick. You talk about reducing unemployment, which obviously means creating jobs. But one of the things that seems to regularly come up when I discuss jobs with people, not necessarily guests on the air, but, you know, friends, right, family, et cetera, the way that jobs seem to be regularly discussed is helping businesses so they can hire more folks. We need to create businesses. We need to create jobs so that more people can be hired, and that's how you reduce unemployment. But one of the things that seems to rarely, if ever, be discussed is how to make it so that the employees can afford the lower-paying jobs, whether it's through transportation, which we discussed, getting to the jobs so that they can afford to live in the Charlottesville, Albemarle, Fluvanna, Orange, Green area. It's one thing to create the job, but if you don't create the job for an employee who can afford to take it, who can somehow, get to the job, what happens then? It seems like we always discuss part A, but rarely discuss part B in any sort of manner where they tie together.
Well, first off, A and B have to happen at the same time. So I'm going to say they're not sequential. They're coincident. And second, I don't totally accept the fact that our low-skilled workers are going to stay low-skilled and low-educated permanently. That's a big difference. That increasing the ability and the knowledge base so that more of our lower-skilled residents can become entrepreneurs in their own right. That's where a lot of the microloan business effort that's actually this Thursday, there's going to be a meeting in city council chambers on Thursday morning, introducing this concept of getting microloans out to businesses so they can begin growing on their own. There's a lot of problem with having access to capital. So I'm really of the mindset that we have to think not just in terms of creating low-wage jobs for currently low-income people. I am all about creating more growth track opportunities for our existing low-income families so that they can start seeing, you know, moving into the working class, moving into the middle class. And that also means then having a wide range of housing opportunities available. Currently, we don't have an adequate supply of workforce housing. You know, 65% of the teachers in our city cannot afford to find housing in Charlottesville. They have to drive in from points as far away as Nelson County and Waynesboro in some cases. So that what I'm saying is that, yes, it's a multi-pronged effort that has to look at getting people to live where they work and getting people to work where they live, and also in a manner that pays attention to all the other externalities that factor into people's well-being. And that, you know, daycare is something that I believe we currently have a lot of conversation in the city between city schools, employers, city government, that let's just figure out a process to get high-quality daycare available so that people are not worried about where they're putting their children when they go to work. I've often thought about other ways of creating more transportation choice. Currently, people get around by cab a lot. That's very expensive. But is there a way to do that more efficiently? A way to get more van service going so that people are not feeling left totally alone trying to figure out these complex issues.
Are these topics falling behind in the discussion because the ones that seem to affect a larger number of people are the water study with the dam, the Meadow Creek Parkway, having been in on the front page for a longer period of time, so that the discussion about not just creating new jobs, creating jobs that are beneficial to potential employees and more than just income, because they need the transportation, because they need a home that costs a lower percentage of their income because of childcare issues. How do you get that further up the ladder for discussion or for more people who don't think about it to partake in the discussion?
It is a very important point that you make. What gets on the city council agenda is critically important. What gets on the city council's priority list at our retreats is very important. We currently have built-in work sessions every month. We're going to aggressively use those as venues to hash out the details of these various priority areas. Like I said, for example, getting high growth track sustainable jobs for low-income residents is a priority. Better transit is a priority. Getting the city market built is a priority. We can work on these issues now, I think, in a much more focused way because we have moved on for some really big issues that have taken up a lot of public discussion. And I'm thinking that there's going to be a lot of new discussion coming on the council in the next 4 years. And I think it's going to be exciting.
Well, I hope so for both the winners and the losers of your side of the fence in some of the larger discussions. I hope that people will allow city council to move on to other topics. 11:30 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Kathy Galvin, one of the newer members from Charlottesville City Council, as we talk about issues specific to Charlottesville and Albemarle County and some general politics that affect you regardless of where you live in the listening area. Let me take a moment and thank The Backyard for their support. UVA Corner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a seasonal menu, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. The Backyard is now open on Sundays. They serve brunch and then a pub food menu until close. For more information, it's 202-8215, online thebackyarduva.com, and a Facebook page. Kathy, let's go on to a couple other topics. Former member of Charlottesville School Board. And surprisingly to me, anyway, Charlottesville was known as having, they didn't have a budget problem. They always had money stashed aside for these things. And then suddenly, to me, we find out, whoa, there's a huge deficit upcoming. What are we going to do with the schools? The school budget is more than $1 million in the hole, or at least to what? Talk about that. How is Charlottesville going to deal? Because this is all new to you, coming into an area that into the council where right. they have to deal with the deficit and how it affects your past expertise with the school board.
Well, just a little background. Across the 4 years I was on the city school board, we had been routinely cutting the budget $1 million every year. One of the first things I called for as a new school board member was a management efficiency study, and we got that, the MGT study. That told us many things that we could do in order to save a lot of money for the Charlottesville City Schools. It also told us how to become more efficient. So we did many of those things as best as we could. We have been increasing gradually our student-teacher ratio, for example. But we also have the growing need to address some very, very challenging issues that face public education all across the country. And we do have a very high poverty in our school system, which means that we absolutely need good preschool, 3-year-old and 4-year-old, for example. So I became very aware while I was on school board of the challenges facing public schools. It's not only the school's responsibility to create the environments where children can learn. That is a community-wide issue. It starts in the neighborhood. And again, as an urban designer and architect, I began to understand the connection between school and neighborhood very, very well. So now that we come to 2012, the $4 million deficit was not of the school's doing. The $4 million deficit was not of the school's doing. That was what was the initial problem. It was because of changes to VRS, the Virginia Retirement System, and also because the state legislature had changed how we can count the number of children in our city. We used to be able to count any child under the age of 18. Now that group belong, and if that group belonged to the university community, we could still count them as children living in our city. That gave us, that was tied to how much tax revenue we got back from the state legislature, the sales tax revenue. So when they changed how they were going to do their VRS accounting and how they were going to do their counting of heads, that meant we lost $4 million in one fell swoop. So that wasn't anything anybody could foresee. So that's where we are at this point. And so when you said the phrase stashed away, we had $1.5 million that we had been diligently putting aside for design services so that we could re-envision and redesign and rebuild our middle school so that it was going to be a state-of-the-art school with excellent lab facilities, excellent kinds of learning environments for our children, and that we were eventually going to be getting a payback because we wanted to have one middle school and put back the fifth grade to all the elementary schools so that we were, in a sense, consolidating our school facilities. But that we had to use that $1.5 million that we had been saving for this to just cover basic operating expenses and to cover the deficit. So that's where my experience with the schools have come in. And now I've also encouraged and we've reached consensus on the city council that we're going to make a greater attempt to look at how city school and city government could consolidate some services again. Our budget directors are meeting together. There's a committee that's being formed that's going to be working at this pretty diligently to see how we can eke out more efficiencies between the city government and the city schools. Again, a very important conversation. This is not going to go away, these budget issues. We have to keep thinking long term.
A quick and easy question for you, 11:36 on the wake-up call with our guest, Kathy Galvin, from Charlottesville City Council. Is it important that the city manager for Charlottesville actually live in Charlottesville?
There is seemingly the general feeling that that is the case.
But what's your take on it? Seemingly, because first explain seemingly. Why does it matter? And then your feeling on it.
I think that there are benefits to living in the jurisdiction that you work in. You're closer. You can see, touch, smell the place that you are working in. However, I don't want to say that it's easy to find the right place to live in Charlottesville for people who are our employees. And that gets down to what kind of variety of housing stock we have for all kinds of income levels, from the workforce to the working poor to the middle class. And quite honestly, our city manager is having difficulty because of the latest economic crisis in the housing market to get into the city. So that's why I'm saying seemingly, because you have to look at the circumstances. They're very difficult.
But would we draw the line at the city manager or, who else to be closer to the people that they work with in that area? Would the teachers or the superintendent, the police chief, etc.? At what point do you say this is important and this is unimportant?
And that's a very interesting and good conversation that we haven't had as a council at this point in time, given that I want to strive for better regional cooperation between ourselves and the surrounding jurisdictions. I do see that it's not something that is a pressing issue for me. However, I do see that an overall goal is to get more and more of the people that work here to live here so that we get more cars off the road. That limits CO2 emissions. That also limits pollutant runoff into our streams. So on that basis, I look at it as a goal. Let's get more people living here that work here. And that way we're going to solve a lot of issues all at once. But So I tie that to almost an environmental green planning issue as not so much as something that I see as a political issue. Again, this is something that we haven't talked at length on City Council about, and I do think that there are many people that feel strongly that we need to have people working and living in the city of Charlottesville, especially if they're under the city's employment. But I also say we need to make sure we've got the housing stock for those people to live in. And if you're saying people have to live here and then they can't afford to live here, then that's something's wrong with that. So I would like to even expand we have a tax deferment program where we allow people to expand their houses, enlarge them, remodel them, and for 7 years they don't have to pay taxes on that. That is a great boon to get middle-class people to live into the city. Let's extend that. Let's make it easier for people to make our older, smaller housing stock more accommodating to today's families. That it's a very important point. Our housing stock in the city is, most of it was built before 1950. It's less than 2,000 square feet, and it's on expensive land. And people can find better housing stock for cheap an outlying county. So until we make it easier for people of moderate incomes to actually have the kind of housing that would let them have families that they can grow into, then we have to be very careful about demanding that they live here.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
11:41 on the Wake-Up Call with Kathy Galvin. And this week in The Hook, George Shugley still has almost everyone's attention. The Hook keeps us informed on the trial. There's news on Chef Peter Chang from New York to Short Pump. And look at the fun stuff to do, with kids or without, books, movies, music, or art. The Hook, available every day. And support today also coming from L. Oppelman's Pawn Shop, serving Lynchburg families for over a century at 909 Main Street. L. Oppelman always has a selection of jewelry, including estate jewelry and hand-picked GIA-certified diamonds, loose or mounted, plus gold and platinum wedding bands. L. Oppelman also has cultured pearls and watches from brands like Rolex, and Tag. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. All right, back to our guest, Kathy Galvin. Kathy, we hit the part about people living in Charlottesville. There was a recent release of the city's new comprehensive plan. Maybe not so recent anyway, but in it, fewer folks driving only to work. That's the goal. Excuse me, I think I misspoke there. The goal is to get fewer folks who are currently driving only to work. They're not using other modes of transportation. There's a new bicycle and pedestrian coordinator. Is that where money should be spent? Because we're talking about a budget. Is there enough concern in that topic? Is there enough money saved in that topic in other ways to pay for this coordinator? And I'm sure that I'm costing her job now and she's cursing me. But people always talk about, where do we spend our money? And this was one of the first things that was pointed out to me when I said, oh, Kathy Galvin's coming on the show. Anything you'd like to point out? I said, oh, why are they spending money on that?
Okay, well, we definitely need to look at how we're going to increase our revenue streams. One of the main ways to do that, independent of raising taxes, which nobody likes to do, but a major way to increase revenue into the city is to redevelop our growth areas. Our growth areas are the corridors. That's Preston, that's West Main, that's parts of Avon, that's Monticello, there's Cherry Avenue. These growth areas were identified 12 years ago in a study called the Tortugala Study. I have asked to get an accounting of where we are on that, because they had established square footage targets for various kinds of mixed use and residential. People don't realize that when you redevelop in an urban way, you, on a per acre basis, you're generating five times more revenue than a suburban shopping mall, because it's high intensity and it's bringing in a lot of property tax.
Explain that to me, because I think the vision is, oh, you put a shopping mall out there in Crozet, well, look at all the money that's being driven in from that.
That on a per acre basis, it's a lot less, because it's taking up a lot of land in a very inefficient way. And you bring in sales tax revenue, but in an urban setting, and this was a study done in Asheville, North Carolina, as well as Sarasota Springs in Florida, that when they looked at on a per acre basis on mixed use urban development, it was five times greater revenue on a per acre basis than a shopping center in a suburban setting. So here I'm looking at, we've got a lot of grayfield sites that we could be redeveloping. It was a goal that we had 12 years ago. Let's get on with it. Let's do it.
Did you say gray?
Gray fields. That's the areas that are like older areas that are maybe used to be old shopping centers, or they might have been old car dealerships. But
give me
just
a vision. What am I looking at in my head?
If you're looking, like, in some spots along Cherry Avenue, there's vacant lots that are just completely abandoned. And right now, they're just asphalt, broken asphalt. You look on Preston Avenue, a good example of something that is happening, which is an example of what we need to keep doing more of, is that Indoor Biotechnologies has bought the Coca-Cola plant on Preston Avenue. And they are, as we speak, they are working on plans for redeveloping that site and looking at that as a core for, like, a downtown city campus. I would like to bring in more dialogue with UVA to see how we can start creating even more connections between UVA's research and biotechnology so that really does begin to be almost like an innovation district. Boston's innovation district was discussed. I've been passing around an article that I had talking about the things that we need to create places that generate work but also great living environments. So getting back to the point of, it's all going to be about increasing revenue streams into the city. We've got to realize that we have that possibility and that opportunity. In order to do that, though, you've got to have well-designed and well-maintained public streetscapes. That means bike-ped infrastructure. That means having ample sidewalks, street trees, having storefronts that are engaging, lots of transparency. You have to have a very engaged street life. So to create a successful innovation district, you've got to have density. You've got to have diversity. You don't want all just luxury apartments. You've got to have that variety of housing type, that variety of job type. Then you've got to have a very, very active street life. And that takes good design, good urban design. So to me, having a bike ped coordinator is all about supporting rejuvenating and redeveloping our corridors so that we ultimately get revenue back.
Good to know I didn't cost her job.
No, you did not.
Okay, good. Let's throw that out there in case she's listening. By the way, today's program is being pre-recorded, so no phone calls. You can go to the Charlottesville City Government website and find Kathy Galvin's email. The show will be podcast on SeavillePodcast.com. You can leave notes there if there's anything directed at Kathy that's polite or me that's polite. I'll make sure that we pass that along. 11:48 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk with Kathy Galvin from Charlottesville City Council. You said something about using or having UVA participate. We mentioned earlier about UVA getting free bus transportation, and city members do not. One of the things that I found interesting is that University of Virginia architectural students have recently been used in a program to try and come up with a design for the Belmont Bridge. Are there other ways, and there's no guarantee that one of their images, what's the word that I want, one of their designs,
the design concepts,
will
yeah.
be actually used. But are there other methods that you have thought of or that are out there and discussed on Charlottesville City Council where projects like that can be used from the university at no cost, where the university can contribute in other ways at no cost to the city and county?
Well, first I just want to back up a little bit. With the free trolley, that's open to all residents of the city. It's not just UVA. It's just that UVA students benefit from that directly. And I was just making comparison that we don't have a corollary of free bus service going to PVCC. So I just want to make that clear that that's free to everybody. But anyway, getting back to ways that, in this case, it was the architecture school. And again, I went to UVA. That's where I got my master's in architecture. I am very, very fond of that school. And also in the late 90s, I was an assistant director with Ken Schwartz for the Design Resource Center. That Design Resource Center was embedded in the architecture school. That later evolved into the CCDC, the Charlottesville Community Design Center, that was located before it folded. It was located in city space. So I'm thinking to myself, could this possibly be the concept of a community design center, the idea of community design going back to the university again? Because it started there, it went out to be a public storefront, now it's gone back to the university. I think we're seeing, again, a resurgence of that desire for UVA's architecture school to be very, very directly tied to bigger process questions and planning processes in the city. We already have Echo Mods. That's a kind of a site-by-site contribution to the city's landscape, but it's not a bigger planning process or bigger design process as we witnessed with the Belmont Bridge. So I think this is the beginning, I hope, as they say in Casablanca, of a beautiful friendship. And not that we weren't friends before, but I think now it's going to be maybe a working relationship. But right, the next step that we're doing now is pulling together kind of a task group of the university faculty as well as city government folks to pull out the kernels of each of the design schemes that could have some real pertinence to the Belmont Bridge design itself. So I would also like to think that we could bring in other schools. For example, Darden School. I mean, Darden has the Taylor Murphy Center, which is an incredible institute that's focused on improving the economic global competitiveness of parts of Southside Virginia, which is a depressed area, economically depressed area. I've been talking about, well, could we have a Taylor Murphy Center type institute to help focus on this problem that I mentioned earlier, getting work and work readiness of our low-skilled, low-income residents. That, I think, where we are starting these conversations. So I think it's exciting. It's a very exciting time. And independent of all this, there's the Planning and Coordination Council, the PAC, which has been a long-standing forum that allowed for dialogue and discussion between the county, the university, and the city. And Mayor Hoosier and Vice Mayor Kristen Zekos are both on that. And I suspect that we're going to be seeing and hearing about their conversations more and more. It's an exciting time.
11:54 here on the Wake Up Call with our guest, Kathy Galvin from Charlottesville City Council. Don't go anywhere because at noon, as you know, Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Perdue with the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. Kathy, a quick and easy question for you. McIntyre Park, should it have a golf course or not?
That's not an easy question.
Why not? There's only so much space. You either leave enough to make it or you don't.
We are going through the last public meeting. I believe it's next Tuesday night. There will be one option, I believe, that shows the golf course as the dominant use, and another option that shows the botanical garden / natural area is the dominant use. And I don't know if there's going to be a third one. I can't remember. That is going to be the final moment of public weighing in, and then it begins to be a discussion for the city council to have in public with the five of us.
And do you lean one way? Certainly people can change their minds.
Exactly.
But do you
exactly.
lean one way?
I have just recently learned more details last week. I had along with Dee Dee Smith, we had our orientation with Parks and Recreation last week. The city manager attempted to get us all these orientations before we assumed office, but we ran out of time. So it was the first time I got a very detailed understanding of the golf program and the first tee program. And to see everything in context. So at this point in time, I'm looking at that, understanding where we are. There was an important point that was made, though, that there's an awful lot of golf in the region, and we already have a golf course. I want to take a better perspective, a bigger perspective, and say, so do we have anything like a botanical natural area?
All right, I'll let you off the hook.
And that's it.
This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Just 4 minutes left with our guest today, Kathy Galvin. Kathy, you've been accused or attributed of talking about reversion and getting Charlottesville to return to being a town so that Albemarle can take over so much of the economic problems and crises that go into Charlottesville.
I didn't author the concept of reversion, number one. That's been around for 20-some-odd years. I brought it up in the wake of our discussion with the city school board and the idea of the $4 million deficit that could balloon out to another $2.5 million if the Robert Bell bills pass that adjust the local composite index. And that would be directly tied to our revenue sharing agreement. So looking at this dire situation and knowing that 2 years ago there was an attempt to consolidate more city and county school services that came to nothing. And it's interesting when I talked to my fellow school board members and school staff, they said that the county wouldn't come to the table. And I've talked to people in the county, and they said the city wouldn't come to the table. So it began to be somewhat of a frustration for me that and I made this point at our last city council school board luncheon, we've got to get to the table again. This is a serious crisis for both jurisdictions. And then reversion popped into my head as, okay, this make us one community, because we are one community, despite the fact that many people are trying to say that we're not. That was the spirit that I raised it as a solution. It's generated discussion now, serious discussion about how can we better consolidate city school and city government services.
What kind of discussion? I mean, was it, have you gotten mostly positive, or have you gotten the strike back?
From the community, it's been very positive. I'm learning more and more that there are more city and county residents that want our two jurisdictions to work better together than not. So I think I put out the reversion as one option. How can we consolidate? We've got duplication of effort everywhere. That's spending money left and right. The school board in the county has lost $5 million due to the VRS change. They've already gone through a major cuts in their school division for the last 4 years. So I think it's time to get to the table again. And if bringing up the spectral reversion has gotten people to take that conversation seriously, then I think it was very good.
And for those of you listening, again, the show pre-recorded, find Kathy Galvin's email address on the Charlottesville City work site and send her your emails about reversion, pro or con, transportation,
economics,
et cetera, jobs, and other topics that we've covered today. Kathy, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. We did cover a lot of ground.
Well, again, you know, without the phone calls, it's more like, well, let's get Kathy in here and talk about what it's like to be new and some of the things that, especially people in the county, don't always follow the things in the city during a primary campaign. But thanks again.
Thank you so much.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.